I guess that brings us to the topic that we wanted to sort of talk about today, which was in relation to philosophies such as atheism in relation to the COVID era, COVID-19 era.
Yeah, that's a very interesting discussion question. You know, I think it'd be a good back and forth when you ask me about it.
Listen, the thing is, in this particular situation that we're currently living in, we're living in an environment where religion is being questioned. People are getting sick, and the very highly devout people are actually placing their trust in God and saying, we won't get sick, we can pray and do this and do that. And they are getting sick eventually. And I'm not necessarily at all actually talking about even people from the Islamic faith. I'm talking about, you know, people in general. And this has been the case for many different faith communities. So this has been an opportunity for those who are not inclined towards religion in general to make religion into a type of punching bag.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that. Because, I mean, it's a very good point. But I think that the problem is with religion, at least in a more orthodox form, is that, like, the idea that people who believe in Allah will not get sick, will not die, will not be infected, that somehow Iman will prevent you from going through what is the creation of Allah. Allah has created life. Death is a part of our existence as humans. And this strange idea that some people who would claim to be religious have, that somehow if you like trust in Allah, you will not get sick, you will not die. Like, that, this is the rather strange perspective, right? But it is very common to hear this type of mentality, right, among many people. But the thing is that even in this era, we've seen clearly that even like the secular science, which is often touted as a response to religion, which is actually a very facetious argument, is also unable to prevent the virus. The only thing that has prevented the virus is by very authoritarian government measures, you know, to ensure that people do not engage in behaviors that would have been absolutely normative a month ago. Like the idea that somehow, because you believe in Allah and you get sick, this is a sign that somehow Allah doesn't exist. This is a very, like, it's, I think it goes back to ultimately quite a simplistic thinking.
It does not necessarily have to be that idea that Allah doesn't exist as a result of the pandemic. It can also be a situation, as far as I understand, on behalf of these people, is that due to this happening, your concept of Allah or God in general may not be what God is in reality. The core teaching of many religions is that God is a being that is compassionate towards his creation, etc. and so forth. So this pandemic, in their opinion, is an example of how God cannot be compassionate. Why would he be compassionate if he is imparting this hardship upon his creation? So what people may potentially do is turned to other ideologies or philosophies such as deism.
I was basically a deist when I was younger. Even I used the term deist at times when I was younger, before I became Muslim, alhamdulillah.
So for those of our listeners who are not aware as to what deism is basically a philosophy, not necessarily a religion at all, but it basically suggests that there is, suggests the existence of a God, but it also suggests that God is simply a being, simply exists and is apathetic towards the needs and concerns or even emotions of human beings.
Yeah, basically, it's like secular humanism, like atheist secular humanism, except they can also say, well, maybe at the beginning there was also a God, you know, like that Allah created, or an entity created everything, and then it left everything, you know, like a watchmaker, didn't get involved after that.
Right. That's so basically, the God of deism is basically also referred to as the God of Spinoza or the God of Einstein, etc. and so forth.
The European Enlightenment philosophers, they're mostly deists, not atheists.
So surprisingly, even Dawkins was very supportive of this kind of belief. You know, he said that the type of belief in God that he detests is that which is linked to religion, the type which he has no problem with whatsoever is this one, the God of Spinoza, etc.
Yeah, because if you look at all these, like Dawkins and his fellow new atheists and people like this, is essentially they are actually anti-religious. They're what in Europe used to be called anti-clerical, in that it's not actually the idea that there's a God that upsets them. It's the idea of a religious system of thought and being shaping the lives of individuals that is what annoys them. They do not like the idea that people's lives and thoughts would be shaped by anything that is sort of broadly classified as religion. This is why if you debate some of their followers, they'll say weird things like Marxism is religion without God. And you think, but if there's no God, well then isn't that atheism? But also no, because its impact on the life of its followers is like religion, right? So Marxism is a religion. And while there is some sort of validity to that perspective, it ultimately counteracts their notion that it's because of a belief in God. But with this thing about deism, I think the core problem is that it ultimately goes back to a lack of understanding of the nature of this life. This life is not, we don't live in Jannah. This is not like the utopia is not in this world. The life of this world is a life of test and trial to see who will obey Allah and attempt to strive and obey his commands, and who will go astray, who will disobey Allah. It's not as if like we live in a world where nothing bad is meant to happen. Like the idea that somehow nothing bad should ever happen because why? Like, because that's essentially like the mentality is that if bad things happen, then Allah is not compassionate. That's essentially the argument. Right? So saying, but what that means is that you want this world to be paradise. And if this world was a perfect world where nothing bad happened, this would be Jannah. This would not be a world of tests. You know, we would already be in paradise.
So I think this is perhaps the main obstacle for many of those who tend to take this particular line of argument, because it is very difficult to reconcile hardship and belief in an afterlife, I suppose, for some of these people. It takes away, in their opinion, the perfection of God, if you like.
Yeah, but I think that, like, again, it's very often because they sort of, they judge Allah as a human, if you understand what I'm saying, is that like their opinion of what Allah should do is what they as an individual would do if they had like the power, instead of understanding that Allah is not a human. Allah is not, we cannot comprehend the nature of Allah, only that he is so much greater than all of humanity in his essence. And if you look at their perspective, you know, about the perfection and so on, this is really paying lip service to criticize. It's not that they actually believe this. It's that like in many ways they think of Allah, it's like almost like close to being a mujassima or this type of like, but even further, where like their idea of God is that God is essentially a human being who should do what they do. And also to be even a bit more critical, there is a degree of like arrogance in them where they're sort of saying that their particular thoughts that they as an individual had are the correct thoughts. Like their understanding is the correct understanding, and whatever does not conform with their individual understanding of a situation is wrong and even immoral. You know, while this on the surface would say, oh, well, that's not how most people think. If you actually break it down, that is what they're actually saying. Because God is not doing what I would do as an individual if I was in that position, which is obviously impossible, therefore this is not moral, this is evil, this is not compassionate.
Quite interesting that you said that, because I do recall, for example, Christopher Hitchens, him referring to God, وَالْعِيَادُ بِاللَّهِ, you know, this detestful for us as Muslims to hear, but he used to refer to God as a dictator. And for that reason, among many others, he would refer to himself as not an atheist, but an anti-theist. Someone who was not just did not believe in God, but who was totally against the idea of God.
But I would say that's true of like most of these, especially like these hardline new atheists. I would say that actually, I feel that many of them actually do believe in God. Like the idea that like you hate God is still slightly unpalatable. Like if someone sort of militantly goes around saying they hate God, you know, it's sort of a satanic type of Anton LaVey type, a black metal rock mentality that they hate God. Even like an ordinary person on the street who's not religious will sort of think, it's a bit weird. You know, even if he gives this argument, the idea that he hates God, that's kind of weird. But if you say that I don't believe there is a God and religion corrupts, that argument is more palpable. It's more acceptable, you know, socially.
Mm. I believe the actual term for it is misotheism.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing that in Hamza Dorsis's book.
So, unfortunately, it's quite strange in a way to acknowledge the fact that there is a word to cover that exact theory of thought or belief system, rather. I suppose, look, you know, bringing it back to the original conversation, there seems to be a lot of skepticism which is geared towards people of religion in general. For example, I remember reading quite recently that the Israeli health minister was quite passive about this whole COVID-19 stuff. And as a result, he was not taking the health precautions very seriously. And he has consequently been infected himself. And he comes from a very religious background, an Orthodox background, etc. and so forth.
It's true of, what's his name? Dutton in Australia, he got infected. And these are like top people. It's like anyone can... But the thing is, though, there is this strange standard with religion where, like, somehow, especially sort of started the European Enlightenment, but then it like reversed all over the world, is that somehow you can criticize religion in a weird way. Like, there's a weird way whereby every sort of misdeed of a religious person, or even just like a mistake by a religious person, is immediately indicative, not of them as an individual, not even of their individual religion, but of the idea of a belief in God itself. And therefore, in a way that you would not do with any other individual, right? Like with any other individual who believed, like for example, with even say a secular humanist atheist who did something, if to say that this is what atheism represents, people would say, no, that's unfair, you're generalizing it, you know. But when it comes to a religious person doing something bad, immediately they are not treated as an individual. You know, it's a strange sort of reversal. And rather they are treated as a representative of their religion only. And it's only with Islam. Like we see this with Muslims all the time, but even with other religions, this is the case. You know, well, I think just in general, it's like, for example, with them, it's rather common, but we say a Catholic priest engages in some form of, you know, what Powell was just acquitted of. That's another story. You know, people will not just blame the Catholics for that. They will blame, oh, see, this is these religious people. They preach chastity. They're, you know, doing X, Y, Z, you know. But they won't just treat that. Say, you go to the comments. It won't be, oh, look at Catholicism doing this. Or look at Powell as an individual. Look at people in power. It'll be, look at religious people. They say one thing, but all of them are secretly the worst people ever. You know, this mindset is very much there. But I would say that's sort of the mentality of the zeitgeist of like the West in this time that then spreads all over the world because of the interconnectivity, because of globalization, because the West sort of has a culturally, you know, dominant position in this particular moment of history. That is absolutely not universal, regardless of what many people would think. It's a fairly brief moment. This type of thinking is kind of in the back of the heads of people.
One of the things that you've alluded to is people associating traditionally religious people as having done something incorrect and wrong. For example, you mentioned Pell, and associating that with the idea of religion itself. And I think that's a very dangerous thought, but it also happens to be something which is quite widespread. With regards to the Catholic Church, it's all of those scandals which are related to the church. In the case, unfortunately, with Muslims, you know, there is that big stereotype of terrorism that is plaguing members of the Muslim community and so forth. And it takes, I suppose, a certain level of wisdom and even maturity to separate that from the reality of faith itself.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, because I'll give you the converse example is I was telling some friends of mine, I started reading some of these scientific journal articles on COVID just out of curiosity. And I told them, I was, like in myself, I was surprised that like basically every paper, if it came from a Western university, had at least one Ahmed or Fatima or Negrestani or Dawood or, you know, like some name that was explicitly a Muslim name, right? At least one. And sometimes you'd have an article like the NYU University and it would have like five Muslim names on it. And even me as a Muslim, I was sort of surprised to see that you had all these people who had Muslim names who were in the sciences or in medicine. I'm sure you know, and I know many people who are very practicing, even say some shiuk, who are also medical doctors and so on. But you won't get people saying, oh, see, those religious people, in fact, doctors specifically are more religious than the general population, statistically. But you won't get people saying, oh, those religious people, they're all doctors. You know, you won't get people thinking like that. But you will get, like, so for example, if something positive is done, generally the association will not be made. But the association will be made selectively. And I claim that, and this is also true of, say, Islamophobia, anti-immigration, is that the prejudice exists first, even if it's not vocalized. And then later the evidence is fitted to it.
Even in that example that you mentioned, I think the issue might be that religion is not the main element. There might not be a general religiosity on behalf of those people who are medical doctors or scientists or researchers, for example. Religion might be just simply be taking the back seat. But I do see your point in the sense that the presence is there. Yeah.
This is also very relevant to Islamophobia. The amount of Muslims who are, say, medical doctors, like this is related but aside, is disproportionate, right, in most Western countries. But you will not get a Pauline Hanson or a Fraser Anning or a Lauren Savin or Stephen Mudd talking about that. Instead, they will talk about, oh, look, if you look at prison statistics, if you look at such and such. And this is like something I think Muslims also need to realize is that, yeah, terrorism might exist and might motivate some Islamophobia. But we also have to realize very often the prejudice doesn't necessarily have to have a cause. Like it can, like people can sort of just be prejudiced just because something is different, they fear it. And then later on, they will make arguments based on evidence they can find.
You mentioned that you've come from, originally from a background where you adopted a deistic concept of life, I suppose. How did you navigate yourself out of that?
The thing is, it's funny, you know, like, and this is the thing with trauma and like many of these things is that, and even this is very relevant to this topic in general, what guides one person will lead another astray. Like a crisis tends to provoke both opposites. So you will get both people who become more selfish and not caring about others, and you get people who are more community spirit in the same incident. You'll get people who were religious before, there's a crisis, they lose their faith, and then you'll get someone who was irreligious, and then during the crisis, he began to ponder life, and this caused him to become religious, you know, caused him to think about it. Like in my case, sort of my family were sort of, I guess, vaguely more religious than normal, but my family has not stayed the same in religiosity, even in my lifetime. They've alternated. But like basically in my upbringing, I had essentially a quasi-deist upbringing in that I always thought that God was important, but we weren't especially religious. And sort of what changed that was when I was 14, I witnessed a suicide. So what happened was that I was on a school excursion coming out of a train station, and there was a group of us. And when we were going out, we heard this like this weird sound. Like I can't even, it was like a fud, but it was squishy. It was loud. It was like this loud bang, but it was squishy. It's very hard to describe. Like if you haven't heard the sound of a human body hitting the ground. And this person in a suit, you know, he looked young, but you couldn't see because his face was down, had jumped or was pushed, for all I know, from a 20-story building and it hit the pavement, like immediately as we were coming out. We didn't see him fall, but we heard him. And as soon as we got out, we saw the body. And just inside of me, like, this just sort of provoked a, I guess you could call it an existential crisis, where I began to ponder, like, what is the meaning of life? Like, why are we here? Like one moment you're alive, you're in a building, the next minute you're just a lifeless corpse with blood coming out of the sides of your body, you know? Because we could see the blood, the pools and so on. And so it was that trauma. But the thing is, I sort of had never been able to accept Christian theology, even though my grandmother was quite religious, devoutly Catholic. And my father had been religious when he was younger. And so he had many religious books, and he had a lot of understanding of Christianity and Judaism to a large degree, because he had been very religious And so I had a very strong understanding, not only a very strong, I had an understanding of this, and I could never accept these ideas. And over time, I was familiarized with the ideas of Islam, especially by the Brief Illustrated Guide to Understanding Islam. But I would say ultimately Allah guided me. Like, I can't really say, like, despite this general story, like, I would say it was ultimately the guidance of Allah. It was like a set of kind of random events that in hindsight makes sense. Like, for example, in hindsight, like, at the time, seeing a suicide and reading the Brief Illustrated Guide to Understanding Islam a month or so later didn't seem that connected, you know. But when I look back now, I can see a connection. But, like, I always thought that, like, because the thing is, because I always believed there was a God, so, like, when you believe there's a God, it kind of eventually follows that there has to be some form of religion. There has to be, because it doesn't make sense that this world would have been created and then, like, the creator just did nothing with this creation. I mean, that gets into a whole bunch of other topics.
The argument that is generally presented by those who wish to argue for atheism or deism is generally speaking that if there is a God of unlimited wisdom, knowledge, and power, why would he necessitate a person to, for example, refrain from working on the Sabbath or clip his toenails every 40 days, etc. and so forth? In your opinion, what would the best way be to answer such a doubt or concern?
Well, I would say that that's ultimately a test for the individual. It's not because the creator didn't have the power to do that if he wanted. He gave the individual the choice whether he was going to obey revelation or disobey. And this is what these commands do, to show that he is sincerely willing to obey what has been commanded unto him. It's again, if like the angels, as we believe in the Islamic sense, they do not disobey Allah. They do whatever, like, you know, they don't have an independent will that allows them to just act on their own volition and decide what they're going to do. You know, they follow the commands of Allah because that is their nature. Whereas humans have been given the choice. And this is what, again, like, but I say, like, many of these people, right, like, you're never really going to convince them. But I find that many of them, like, over time, they don't tend to retain this rigid thinking of, like, I find hard atheist thinking tends to be temporary. Like, I find most people who are, like, militantly atheist, when they are militantly atheists, you will never be able to convince them of anything. But, like, over time, they tend to, like, they have their views go into all kinds of strange directions.
I think militancy in any school of thought, religion, or philosophy lasts for a finite period of time. It's only when a person gets a certain amount of experience, maturity, or perhaps they've been involved in one too many arguments that they will begin to change their tune slightly. So I
know some people get more militant, like, you know, because they, well, you get sort of like, you know, when you get older, you sort of mellow. And that's very often true, but I find there are some people who get more hard line in their views when they get older. But I know atheism, like actually, by the way, if you want to look at the Dawkins type atheism, it alternated from being a anti-religious movement that gave Islam a lot of attention, in contrast to a lot of older European atheism, which only peripherally dealt with Islam, to essentially reconciling with Christianity. And many new atheists, not the leaders, but like the lay people, even became Christians again. But the focus became, many of them became sort of right-wingers in attacking just Islam. In fact, as a friend of mine was telling me, discussing this topic with me, he said, you know, Sam Harris did a whole thing to try and tell atheists that we hate Christians too. We're not just not Christian. We hate Christianity as well. We don't just hate Islam, because they'll say they don't hate people. They hate the religion, which is sort of strange. They don't, we hate everything you believe in, but we don't hate you.
Well, I think one of the biggest fallacies of the new atheist movement is that they seem to combine too much between science and atheism. They seem to think that they are one and the same thing almost.
Which is not especially accurate. I mean,
Of course, you know, but it seems to be what is presented. Why? Because they're looking at the idea of whether or not exists through the scientific method.
The one thing that I think to understand also is that, and this has roots in things like logical positivism and so on, is the idea that just because there is a naturalistic scientific explanation for a phenomenon to occur does not mean that behind that there is not a greater occurrence. Like just the fact that an ex, and this is, but they will, for the most part, they will willfully ignore that. And if it's brought up, they do have some arguments. But, you know, this is the thing, is that like their merger of science, and they can champion science, I claim this controversially, because in this time, actually, most people know nothing about science because of the nature of science as a discipline. It's sort of this very elite club of inside people with a certain type of education who write in specific journals in a language that they understand. So the average layperson, even a very educated person in another field, generally does not know much about science. So it is very easy to, because even the new atheists themselves, right, except for Dawkins, of their four leading figures in the 2000s, none of them were scientists at the time. And now, later on, Sam Harris, after becoming a famous atheist, has become got a PhD in neuroscience. If you understand what I'm saying, right? Like they're able to do this because people don't know much about what science actually is because of the nature of it as a discipline. You know, it's sort of not you understand, like just the nature of science is it's hard for like a people, even people very educated who have not gotten a very specific education, because science is changing all the time because as new research comes that debunks previous research.
I see where you're coming from when you mention these things. I suppose one of the things that atheism or deism seems to not take into account is the individual human journey, I suppose. I mean, you mentioned your own example of how you felt when you witnessed, you know, something pivotal occur in your childhood, I guess, and how profound an impact it had on you. It does not seem to concern itself too much with the emotional things of it all, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's right. And that's because like if you get into philosophy, it has new atheism actually is not actually a scientific school, regardless of it is a very much watered down philosophical school, right? It has its roots in like what's called positivism in particular, where like Auguste Comte, who was the first positivist, had the idea that, and he has antecedents before him, but that essentially everything passes through three stages. That the first stage is the theological stage, and then people move from the theological stage to the metaphysical stage, which is like the philosophical stage. And then people move from the metaphysical stage to the positive stage or the scientific stage. And he believed everything would become scientific. And they sort of have this mentality. Like some of them will consider, maybe religion had a utility a long time ago, you know, but not anymore today, you know. Like even I had a professor who tried making this point, although he wasn't even an atheist per se. He was saying, but, you know, morality improves over time. You know, people... And I was thinking when I was thinking, like, what basis is there for that claim that people today are somehow better as individuals than people even 50 years ago, never mind 2,000 years ago? Like, I would say in many ways people are essentially the same. We're still the same humanity. And if anything, as a collective, we might be slightly worse. We might. I'm not saying we're definitely humans today are horrible and bad and they were so much better in the past. Although there are people who talk like that. But they do have this sort of belief in progress of a very strange kind. Like it's like because our technology is better today, the people are better today.
There doesn't seem to be a level of unreasonability necessarily to that statement, in the sense that slavery was a widespread phenomenon in previous years, for example.
But it is now. They just don't call it slavery. You know, like if you look into practices around the world, in fact, a lot of things that occur now are worse than historic slavery.
You see a difference between actual real slavery versus industrial slavery.
I do actually, and I would claim that outside of American plantation slavery, I mean, this is another topic, older slavery was often more compassionate. the argument that slave owners, even in the United States, gave to the people in the North who told them slavery was bad, which was, by the way, for economic reasons, was that, you see, we have slaves and we actually take care of them because we own them. They are our property. We have to feed them. We have to clothe them. We have to try and make sure they don't get sick. We have to house them. Whereas the factory owner in the North, this is in America, they made this argument. The factory owner in the North, all he had to do was give a pittance of a wage to his employee, and that was that. If the employee got sick, he could just fire. This is before the rise of strong trade unions and so on. He could just fire the employee. He didn't have to take care of the employee's material needs. Nowadays, businesses do only because of strong trade unions, which existed in the past. You know, and again, that's like the only argument that they'll even be able... The other one they'll give is, oh, people are less racist now, which I would dispute. But often, you'll look at it like they'll look at the recent past as if all the past was like that. Like they'll act as if American plantation slavery, which was uniquely barbaric in the history of slavery, American plantation slavery was all of slavery in all of humanity's history. You know, anywhere where a person could be loosely given the term slave. Like, look, if you look at the Islamic history, the Mamluks were slaves, yet they had a higher status in the society than the local free people in Egypt. You know, the local Egyptian Arab peasant had a lower status in the Mamluk society than a Mamluk slave. Obviously, that wasn't the case in American plantation slavery. I mean, I'm not defending slavery per se. What I'm saying is that type of argumentation is sort of relies on a very specific reading of history.
So getting back to our original topic.
Yeah, because we are getting quite far off.
Yeah, perhaps that's a topic for another day, another time. But yeah, getting perhaps back to our original topic, this topic of atheism as a result of the problems that people are seeing in the world, or disbelief in God in general, how do you think something like that can be properly challenged? And I imagine this is something which is having an effect on even Muslim communities as well. Not even just now, even before this pandemic, I'm sure it's a problem which has existed. In your opinion, as someone who is outside of the faith, what, based on your experiences, are ways to sort of challenge it properly, I suppose?
Well, I would say that the first step would actually be firstly, you're not going to ever totally eliminate disbelief in Allah and atheism. And these things, contrary to what people think, have always existed, and even if they were not so outspoken. And secondly, the other thing is that even if people do go astray, I will get to the main point, you know, Allah will guide others to replace them, and Islam will not disappear. This is because some Muslims you talk to about atheism, they almost get this fear that if we don't confront atheism, we actually have to, the Islam will be destroyed somehow. A lot of modernists will also sort of talk like this. We have to compromise positions in Islam because Islam will be destroyed otherwise. They don't say it that way, but they imply it. But getting back to the main point, I would say that, firstly, I think one of the important things we need to realize is that there is a need for people to have a firm grounding in Islam to begin with. Like, many of the people who get confronted by atheist arguments or thoughts or whisperings from the shaitan, they have a Muslim background, but they don't have a firm grounding in Islam to begin with. And this is why, I mean, I'm sure, like, be honest, if you actually look at the people who are quote-unquote ex-Muslims, even their spokespeople, you will find one or two people who they will put very prominently, like Abdullah Qasimi, who had a really strong religious background. But in general, the average one of them did not have a particularly strong background in Islam or even other religions. Well, actually, Christianity is a bit different, but in Islam, before they went astray, you know, there was already something wrong to begin with. The second thing is, I think that we also need to realize a broader context where we Muslims, we are in a position where there is a hegemonic culture above us. Like, the Muslims are in a subordinate position today globally. And culturally, the Western civilization, or even I would expand it to the Northern civilization to include Russia, has kind of a higher status on top of the Muslims, and the Muslims look to them. And because their culture is, if not atheist, at least secular, like, I mean, like a lot of Americans are very religious, but because of that, when Muslims look to the West as sort of the model of everything positive, and sometimes there is some truth to it, but very often it's sort of based on like a very poor understanding of the actual reality, it's sort of inevitable that you will get people who want to copy the Europeans or the Americans in everything. And also, I would also say that in some ways it's because as Muslims, we haven't really understood a broader, I'm not going to say everyone, but we haven't really understood the broader context of atheism. Like, we tend to look at atheism as developing, or they're against religion. But like, for example, atheism of the modern type, which is Western atheism. There are other atheism, but the atheism we're talking about is Western secular humanist liberal atheism that all goes together. These atheisms, this particular type of atheism, which is the actual threatening one, belongs to a particular. So a lot of its anti-religion perspective actually is a response to Christianity. And if you actually assess a lot of their claims, often atheists are actually right. Like, if you look at their criticisms, not in light of a general criticism of religion, but in the context of their understanding of what religion is, was European Christianity, especially European Christianity of an older era. You know, it's sort of like 17th century Christianity. Like, many of these arguments that atheists use today were developed in the past, and they were developed against an older form of Christianity, and have since just been carried over the centuries and decades, getting some minor updates here and there. So what I would say is that, like, for those Muslims specifically who are responding to this, like, this is not for the average people, but it's people who have like a background in deen, there needs to be a greater understanding of the context, not only even the context of that we are living in as Muslims, because this affects even Muslims in Muslim land. Like, even Muslims in Muslim lands are faced. So the greater global context and where these particular thoughts originate.
It's quite a number of thoughts that you've left us with, and I think that's something that we need to explore further at some point in the future as well. But for now, since the time of prayer is quite close as well, is there any thoughts that you can leave our listeners with in regards to even the current situation that we're living in with the pandemic and everything?
The thing is, I think that, like, if we're in the situation we're in now, I think this is a time actually when you're on lockdown, you can't go out, you can't mix with people's mind. This is a time to reconnect with, I mean, your family, which will in most cases be Muslim family. But secondly, to reconnect with Allah, to read the Quran, to, you know, actually try and read the books of the Sunnah, to try and make more dua, to, you know, do more Sunnah. And precisely because you are in this, you can't do many of the things you would have done otherwise. You've been given, in many ways, an access, like, not in everyone's case, but in most people's cases, a lot more time that you wouldn't have had otherwise. I think this is actually the situation for people to reconnect, especially with Ramadan being very close, but even before that. Yeah, with Muslims flirting with atheism and even atheists, I would say, well, I mean, atheism, just to make it, this is sort of a bigger point, but to make a quick criticism, atheism is very good at criticizing other people. Oh, look, you did this bad, you did that bad, you did this bad. But atheism is actually, in reality, a theft, intellectually. What do I mean by that? Is that atheism will take away what a person had before. If a person was religious, right, they were going to the masjid, they were praying salah, they had a spiritual, you know, sustenance when they read the Quran, they had a Muslim community they were connecting to, they had connection with their family, and so on. And then they, a'udhu billah, may Allah protect us all from this, they went astray and they left Islam, they became an atheist. All those things they had before are taken away. And the atheist thinks that, oh, if you take away religion from people, this will, and that's why I call them secular humanists, they will unearth the authentic human being underneath, and they will accept the values, and they will become a one. But this isn't true. Like, when you've done this, you've opened yourself up to any mode of thinking and living, and therefore atheism and actually maybe deism even more so, are not positive phenomena. They are negative phenomena. Like, atheism in itself does not contribute, if you understand what I'm saying.
In what perspective? In the perspective that they're not offering a human being hope?
What I mean by that is that atheism is not helpful, is that atheism will take away what a person had before, and then it will, again, the thing is, because atheists in this time, and not in other times, tend to be secular liberals, they think that, oh, you will leave religion and you will become a good secular liberal like me. You know, I'm a wonderful, and of course, even this, there's a strong tinge of arrogance even in that. But actually, someone who becomes an atheist is now free to adopt any position in the world. So this is why, if you look, a lot of the people who were new atheists became outright white supremacists, because atheism did not offer them a coherent worldview on life. It told them, yes, religion is bad, but okay, I know that religion is bad. What am I going to do with my life after that? What do I believe? I don't believe in religion. What do I believe? I guess I believe in the white race, you know? I guess Hitler had some good points. I guess it doesn't have to be white supremacists. It can be any sort of, I guess Marxism is wonderful. I guess, you know, Stalin was a great atheist hero who broke the shackles of religion and became his own man and built a great civilization. You know, there's no reason that once you become an atheist, that is the place where your head is open to. And the one positive is it's actually a good thing most people who become atheists don't really understand this. That's one positive thing about, in some ways, about the contemporary atheist, is that most atheists don't understand the implications of atheism. You know, it's funny I'm getting into this deep point so late, but you understand what I'm trying to say, right? That atheism will just tell people to, once you leave a religion, you will become just a generic person. But I would hold that that's not actually the case, that atheism has not provided them with an authentic vision of life. It has just demolished something that preceded it. But once something is demolished, something else will be built in its place. And in most people's case, they'll just become generic secular liberals, living, you know, going to clubs and trying to pick up women. And again, they're not successful picking up women. They don't really believe in a virtue of chastity and saving yourself for marriage anymore. Although they might, which again is inherited from religion, they become an incel, you know, because that, like the idea of incels, I'm sure you've heard of them, contrary to them just being angry loners all they are, they have a coherent vision of life. That's my final point, is that atheism is a negative phenomenon in that it takes away, it does not give people anything new, but in taking away, it opens up the possibility for anything else to come on top of what was existing before.
All right, Brother Bilal, I thank you for your time, and I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He keep you safe during these difficult times. Jazakumullah khair. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.